You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
I want all the viewers in the world today to know that this creature is out there. I have no doubt in my mind that there is a primate, a hominoid, a biped, something that walks on two all over this country. There's an unknown species out there, and we're going to find it. We've done vocalizations. We've received something in return, answering to it. We're going to be sharing our finds with the world. Because what we've got now, no one else has. And the legend carries on by the work that we've done all these years.
Bigfoot lives in a movie right now. At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, the party they gon' have out in the St. John's Walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
I beat you to it. I'm doing great. I'm freezing my nuts off.
Yeah.
It's freezing where we're at. But you know what? It's all warm and fuzzy inside because I know it's our night to sit out here and talk to the world, all the people in the Bigfoot world, all the crazies, all the legits, all the people who are dedicated. And that's what it's all about. How are you?
I am fine. I'm great. I'm loving every minute.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. And I'll tell you what, I'd like to philosophize just a minute, if you don't mind, Marco Bill.
Of course.
What did we all do before cell phones and fax machines and emails and things like that? What did we all do?
Well, we had pens and pencils and paper.
We had pens, paper, pencils, and we had a thing called let your fingers do the walking.
That's right.
I still don't understand it, Marco. For the darn to me, I guess I'm just too old school. But the thing that bothers me, it takes just as much time, if not longer, to text somebody than it does to call them, don't you think?
Well, to us older generation, it does. To the younger generation, they're a little lightning speed, little freaks, I want to tell you. They know how to do that stuff so fast.
Well, I'm sure. But you know what? The thing that I don't understand, I guess it's a fad. And I hope it's a passing fad, because I don't like it, and let me tell you why. You know, we travel all over this country, and as we're traveling, we got to deal with these nutcases that are driving down the highway, worrying about black ice, snow, hail, and rain, and everything else that comes along with it. And these screwballs are sitting there texting instead of paying attention to driving.
No, that's absolutely true, yeah.
You know, so I don't know what's happening to the society of today, because it has gone wild. It's gone crazy, okay? And I'm sitting there saying to myself, well, is it me or is it the rest of the world? I don't know, okay? But I can just tell you this. I like my old ways, and I'm not going to change, okay? I like getting up early in the morning. I like watching that sunshine, okay? When these people tell me they sleep until 11 o'clock in the morning, half the day is gone, for crying out loud. Do you realize how much work could be done?
Absolutely.
Maybe I'm just getting old and just listen to this old guy just rant on, ladies and gentlemen, but I'll tell you, that's just my personal feeling. Remember I told everybody this was going to be the worst winter in 50 years? It's coming true. Remember when I told everybody the gas prices were going to hit phenomenal prices? It's coming true. And where did you hear it first? Back in the late September and early October from this old guy. He told you it all, didn't he? He told you. He predicted it. And it's coming true. I'm trying to tell you right now. Right now, the thing about it is we all got to hunker down, ladies and gentlemen. Bad times are coming. You haven't seen it yet. Nobody has seen it yet, okay? But it's coming. You all think the worst is over. And it's called the quiet before the storm. Just be very careful. Make sure you guys got enough put away, socked away, whether it be provisions, money, or what have you. Because the worst is yet to come.
Well, Wisconsin's already started. They're up in arms about the governor's new resolutions for cutting the government pay and retirement benefits for everyone. And boy, they're up in arms about that.
You know, I'm going to give an invitation to this man. He's a guest. His last four numbers is 9432 in the chat room. Now, if you've got any balls, get on the air with me. Let me out you. Let me see who you are. Call us up on your real phone and let this clown come in because I want to talk to him personally, okay? I want to see where this guy comes from, okay? You know, he's pretty bold, and he's lucky that I'm not there controlling that chat room because he'd be getting a piece of my mind. But I'll tell you what, if he calls in, let him in. I want a piece of this guy. Okay?
Yeah, we'll do that.
I want to see what kind of see if he's a real man. Let's see if he can man up to a man instead of hiding behind a false. He doesn't even have a name up there in the thing. Why don't you put your real name up there? Huh? 9432? Why don't you be a real man? Put your name up there. Let's see who you are. Let's see if you're a real man. Or are you another phony like all the rest of them? And then if you got the real balls, call me up. I want to talk to you. But show us your real name. Show us your name on your phone. This way we can come and see you. We'd love to come see people like you, you phony pieces of shit. Okay. Now that I wasted half the time talking to these lunatics and listening to these goofballs, let's get on with our show. What do you think?
I think so.
All right, good buddy. And by the way, I want to give a little shout-out, okay, to Kenny and Janine down there in PA. Love you, man. Miss you. To my gentle giant, to Connie, my sweetheart, up there in Canada. To Rosebud, to all the other people. And Mitch, God bless you, man. I hope things are still going good with Mama. And guess what? I hope everybody is okay that I haven't talked about. A lot of prayers went out this last week for all of our people that have kind of like got the bug and they're not doing well or they're in the hospital. Our prayers go out to you deeply. And I talked to Father Ray on Sunday and he was going to say a mass for everybody. So that's a good thing. But you know what? There's a lot of action going around the country. Said it before and I'll say it again. And by the way, big shout out goes out to my lady Gigi. If it wasn't for her, there'd be no me. She's a sweetheart. Thank you. Baron, out there in the Choctaw Nation, his sister just had the last week an encounter, two of them, within 10 feet. Without any further ado, let's talk to Theron. How are you, Theron?
I'm doing pretty good here. I'm here in Choctaw, Mississippi, which is about 5 miles from Philadelphia, Mississippi. And I'm from the Choctaw Indian Reservation. And our town is very famous for the 1960s civil rights era, where, you know, you've probably seen the movie Mississippi Burning. And it's about our little town here.
Yeah, I sure have. Well, listen, tell me what's been going on. I'm freaking out here. Your sister saw a couple of creatures?
Well, it was actually my niece, my sister's daughter.
Okay.
And, it was pretty exciting for us. I was at work, and when I got off the work, the niece that usually picks me up didn't pick me up. Instead, it was the other niece. As soon as I got in the car, she said, "Jessica, I saw Bigfoot again." And she was pretty well excited. And I just, my mouth just dropped, you know, and I was just stunned. And we got home about 10 minutes later, and everybody was just sitting there in the room, just silent, you know. Nobody said a word. And after a while, my dad said, "Well, Jessica saw another Bigfoot," and we started talking about it. And my mother said that she come lying in the house, you know, and she couldn't catch her breath, and she was trying to say something, but she couldn't say anything. She was crying and weeping and wailing and throwing up and everything, and finally, you know, she sat her down and said, "Sit down on the couch and get a hold of yourself," you know. They sat her down, and excuse me, I would call hold anyway. He said that he saw two bipedal creatures, a few feet away from my mom's and my dad's backyard. And it's a big backyard, and at the end of the backyard is the woods, and there's a trail going to the woods. And what happened was the dogs that live around at my mom's and dad's house, they have a habit of killing other dogs when they wander into the yard. So that's what happened. This one dog came up to the yard, and all three of the dogs jumped that dog and just about killed it. And she went inside, and she said, "Well, I got to drag that dog way in the woods, because if he dies, you know, he's going to smell up the yard, you know, when he gets decayed." So she was dragging the dog, which was nearly dead, into the woods behind my mother's house. There's a trail down there, and about 150 yards, I would say, is a 300-acre lake and a water park that was just recently built there. See how she had on her hood jacket with a hood, and she dragged the dog into the woods about 20, 30 feet into the trail there. And she dropped the dog, and she said, she stood there and watched it. And the dog was breathing very shallow, and she heard some noises a few feet away, but she couldn't see her peripheral vision because she had that hood on, you know. But she heard a louder crackling, snapping sound, and she turned her head, and there they were. They were standing there looking at her, and she... Excuse me. She described them as very tall. One was shorter than the other. They had reddish brown hair, And their eyes, well, he locked eyes with one of them, and the eyes was, the pupils were black. But, you know, we all have a white around our eyes, you know, theirs is rather reddish looking. And she described it as very hairy, very big, and ugly. She said it was very ugly. And this thing bared his teeth. She said she saw her teeth, and this thing just gave her a low guttural growl, which was not a, she described not as a loud growl, but a growl, you know. And she said this must have happened in a few seconds, but it seemed like a long time, you know. And he ran as fast as he could to the house, which is about 70, 75 yards away from where this incident took place. And I'll tell you, that's her second sighting. The first sighting she had was only just one creature that she saw. She said she was standing behind Mom and Dad's house, and this is about sundown. And he said this creature just came out out of the woods where the trail is, and walked out, looked about, and turned around and walked back down the trail, you know. So, you know, that's their second sighting there. But I tell you, that's about the 2, 3, 4, about the 5th sighting in that vicinity. And, you know, it's just exciting to know that there's a bipedal primate running around in Mama's backyard, and there is a water park, which is a very popular water park that everybody comes to during the summertime, and there is a big 300 plus acre lake beside it, and there's houses, and then down the road about a mile and a half, there's a two big, huge casinos, and there's traffic along the main highway there. Yet, there's this creatures, you know, just roaming through, you know, a populated area and this strip of woods there. So, I'm saying that I do believe that this creature exists with my own experiences back in 1973, I believe it was. So my cousin and her son was walking before they built the water park and that 300 acre lake. They were clearing it out so they could build it. And there's a trail, a nature trail that goes from one highway to this highway. Coming through my mom's house here, near my mom's house. They were walking on that trail. My cousin, she said, she asked me one day, she said, "You still live over at your mother's house?" And I don't actually live there. I have a mobile home next to my mom's house. And but I've moved to my brother's house now. And I said, "No, I live over here at the old house where my brother used to live." You know, she said, "Well, we were walking behind your mom's house, and we were going toward the Choctaw Health Center there, which is probably about a half mile through the woods behind my mom's house." And she said that we saw Bigfoot. That's a He just said, flat out said, "We saw Bigfoot." And I instantly, it made my interest go deep. So I questioned her, and she said it was right there. It was eating we saw it eating. I said, we? I said, yeah, I'm Dominic, my son. So I asked, not long ago, I asked Dominic, I said, what did you see back there at behind my mom's house? He said, I don't know what it was, but all I can tell you is it resembled a large orangutan, and it was sitting there, and it was eating. And they saw it kind of from the back, and, you know, the trail did a bend, and they could see it from the side then, you know. But it was sitting there eating. And then in the same vicinity, on the same highway, there's a fella that sings in my group. We're a gospel, Southern gospel group, and he's a lead singer in the group. And him and his wife was coming down the hill. I think the road is about 100 yards, approximately about 100 yards, with a patch of woods on the right side of my mother's house, going south. And he said that when him and his wife was driving down that little hill, he said there was this creature that just ran across the road. It took a couple of two or three steps, and it was already gone. You know, it was fast. He said it was just, it was big and tall, and it just ran across, you know. So when it ran across, it hit it directly behind my mother's house. So I'm saying there is something going on back here. And hopefully, sometimes I will see this creature, you know. And I am, excuse me, I guess you can say a Bigfoot fan because of my own experiences back in the early 70s. And in that time, we were out in the woods and we were all camping out, you know, out in the woods, and we had a big campfire going. There must have been 10, 12 of us. I can't remember who all, but we were sitting around the fire, and the boys got up to the straight of ground a few feet away, and he said, who's that standing there by that big pine tree? And the other guy said, yeah. And there was this big, there was like dry twigs and branches and dry leaves all over, you know. And I guess whatever it stepped on it. There was a big snap, and everybody took off running, you know. And I didn't get to see it. We all heard it coming from behind us. And when we came out of the woods, there was all these young pine trees that stood 15, 20 feet tall, and were all bunched together. And it was in about, I'd say 40 yards, you know, all bunched together. And you just couldn't walk through it, you know, or run through it. But whatever it was coming, and it was stepping. And we could hear the footsteps coming, and we could hear the branches. We can hear all the, sticks breaking and everything, and we can hear it stomping and just walking through behind us. And when it got where all that young pine trees are, the tops of the pine trees, they began to sway apart back and forth, you know. So we all asked each other, I said, what was it? And they said, well, we don't know what it was, but it was big and it was tall and it was hairy. It was really dark, you know. So I poked around, and there's a house down the road. My friend lives there, and not far from there, they usually hunt raccoons at night because the tribe, the Choctaw Indians, at one time, I think, found raccoons a delicacy, you know. So they would hunt raccoons at night. They had flashlights made out of, I think it was our headlights, and I don't know what, but it was all concocted together to make light. He said they were going through the woods in that vicinity, and there was a long patch of berries. And when they got there, they shined a light on this creature that was standing there, just standing there eating the berries. And then when they shined the light on his head, he wouldn't turn around and look at him, but he would turn his head away from the light, but kept on eating the berries, you know. So there's something going on, and we've had people came over last week and walked through the woods behind my mother's house because they heard that Bigfoot was sighted there. So several people came and walked around and tried to find evidence or see if they could actually see it, you know, but it's probably long gone. But one of the guys came over and said that just about a mile west of my mama's house, there's a big pond, and around that pond is a circular highway. Around that circle is all nothing but homes. And there was a creature spotted by the pond there. And I'm thinking, these creatures must be very, very brave to be walking through populated areas, you know. And you would think creatures, you know, that kind of, those kind of creatures, you know, are, they don't want to be seen, or they don't want to be around human population. But, well, these creatures here recently being sighted, you know, seems to be, you know, walking through neighborhoods, you know. And we're at a rural area, so there's a house here, and maybe 100, 200 yards, there's another house there, and another house, you know. So these creatures are walking behind people's yards and walking in front of people's yards, you know. So there is something going on. There's activity going on here. And that was that, you know, people would, you know, scientific investigators would come and see what's going on. So that's the thing that's happening here, here in our little community.
Well, that's pretty good, Theron.
Yeah.
Quite exciting time.
Yeah, it sure is. I'm still quite excited by the sighting that my niece had. Excuse me, and they just moved out of my parents' house. They've been moving for 2-3 days now. They're about to move out, and I believe that it's because of the incident. You know, they're so scared to be around here that they.
That fear factor goes into a lot of them. Let me just, I don't mean to interrupt because I normally give my guests as much time as they need, Theron. A lot of questions I'd like to ask you, but there's so much left in the show with a lot more guests on it.
Right.
I'm just going to ask you one thing. Did your sister or the niece, whoever it may be, ever say what went to her mind, through her mind, when she saw this creature?
I didn't ask her. I just asked her what it looked like, and the only thing that she said was it happened so fast, but it seemed like it happened for so long. You know,
I understand all that. Listen, I know that you're under the weather. You're not feeling well, okay?
Right.
We'll have you back on. I don't know how you're doing that with the choir, with that cold. I don't know. Is your singing still okay?
Oh, well, you know, it's all right, I guess, but our piano players have been having death in the family. We didn't practice.
Sorry to hear all that, and I really don't want to go there right now because I got a lot more show. Do me a favor, mute yourself out. Thanks for sharing with us tonight. I'll have you back on because you've got a lot to tell us, and we need to get on to our next guest. Okay, Theron?
All righty. Thank you very much.
Bless you, and we'll pray for your speedy recovery and for the your piano player, okay?
All righty. Thank you.
Be well.
And just hit your *6 button. Just hit *6. And you'll mute up.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to commercial real quick. On the other side of the commercial, we're going to get in with my cohort, my partner, my road buddy, my young blood himself. He's backed by popular demand because everybody's asking about the clandestine situation in Arkansas, and nobody can tell it better than he. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery. And deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were in the law.
Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marco. You know, Theron is... he gets so engrossed with his stories, you know, it kind of got to me a little bit there, too. But I got to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. The Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. It's remastered. It's got a whole new cover. Go to searchingforbigfoot.com. Go to bigfootliveradioshow.com. You'll see it there right now, okay? Thanks to David Clare. This guy does the most wonderful graphics you've ever seen. Thanks to Jimmy Snell and the original videographer, Brian Mazzola. You're going to see some footage, unseen footage that's never been seen before by the public, that answers all the questions that you may have concerning those two jive blankly blank people from Georgia, okay? Everything that happened, you will see it, and the film does not lie, ladies and gentlemen. You will see it all. One videographer said, you know what, Tom? The world owes you and your boys, a big apology. After you see this, you may understand why. Without any further ado, my cohort in crime, my road partner, my buddy, ladies and gentlemen, we've traveled long and far, and I don't think there's anything that we haven't talked about. Youngblood.
Hi, Chief. We're going to get on the Arkansas story tonight.
Well, yeah, I got to tell you, you know, we've got so many, and then Marco Bill says to me, hey, can Youngblood come in and talk about it now, since you guys aren't there? I said, sure he can. You know, everybody is at their edge of their seats, Rob, and they're all saying, well, my God, you know, Rob was there when you talked to these people. What went through his head? I says, well, the best way of hearing it is to hear it from his mouth, because he was there, and therefore I don't have to put words in his mouth. You've got the floor, son. I'm not going to say a word for the next, 10, 15 minutes. You tell it exactly the way it was from the time we got there, what the weather was like, just like, I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, we're up here on, we went through Highway 2 coming from Minnesota to Montana, and you have no idea how cold it is. But it was pretty damn cold in Arkansas when we went there. It was snowing also. You've got the floor, son. Tell them everything.
Well, to start out with, I'm not sure that 10 or 15 minutes is going to be enough, because this story is just, I mean, you could talk for hours on this, because there's just so much, and it's just little underlying details and how they correlate between one another, because it's actually two to three different stories wrapped up in one. And the way we go about, you know, weeding out the truth from, you know, what's not true is our first person that we talked to discussed some things that didn't correlate exactly with the other guy. And the other guy we talked to said some things that the first guy didn't say and filled in some holes. And he said some stuff that was a direct contradiction of what the first guy said. And we go on to the third guy who says, you know, look, you've talked to these guys. You don't need to talk to me. I would suggest to the other two that you let them know that the best thing they can do is keep their mouth shut. So you got one of those kind of situations going on in the background of all this. And where they're trying to discern the truth and the fact from what's false. False information and everything else that we're hearing at this point in time. And here's pretty much what the gist of the story comes down to. Me and Chief arrive in Arkansas. I'm not going to say exactly what town, because the town's irrelevant. It's not really relevant to what we're trying to do here. And we're not going to use any of the individuals' names for reasons that are probably justifiable in their defense and in the defense of our companies, because we give them a word we weren't going to do that. So here we go. We start off, and we get a phone call from a guy that says, look, I got a story for you and some stuff, that, you know, some serious stuff that went on that I done and was part of, and I would like to share it with you, because I figure it's been about, you know, 10 years, a good round number. It's actually been closer to 14. But he was decided that it's time for him to come forward. He thinks he can share some of this information without fear of being of prejudice or any other type of form of fear that any institution can put on you. So he comes forward. Well, me and Chief, we do what we do. We get in the vehicle. We ride out. We sit down in a nice little hole-in-the-wall restaurant. I mean, you know, there's local people in there, in and out and everything. And he sits down in the back corner, and he starts to tell his story. So we're sitting there, and it's a cold autumn day, as usual. He starts out, well, this started, we went coon hunting. You know, me and this individual, his brother, his father, and he said that was all. It was just the three of us. We went coon hunting, and we killed a 75-pound raccoon on some property that happens to adjoin some government property, and a known government facility there. Used to be a base. The ground facility and ground level is still visible from the highway. It's still there. And believe it or not, even though the base is classified as being inactive and shut down and abandoned, that there's plenty of trucks and whatnot and military ordnance and hardware coming in and out of there all the time to, you know, directly contradict that. So that's not the entire truth. They're doing something that they don't want nobody to know about out there. So he starts off, well, it's just a coon hunting story next to happens to be adjacent to the property. This is the property that's owned by the government, military facility. They kill a 75-pound raccoon that night. They're starting to wrap things up. It's probably about 1:30, 2 in the morning. They decide it's time to get out of here. You know, we done all we're going to do tonight, and we'll come back and we'll hunt again tomorrow night. Well, one of the guys is like, well, you know what, I got to take a leak. I really need to go to the bathroom. So we're out there in the woods, you know, just a bunch of guys out hunting in the woods. So he goes over there about 50 yards from the rest of the guys, and it's pitch black, dark, no moon. And, you know, he unzips and he commences to taking a leak. So he's out here urinating in the woods, and he's got his flashlight with him. And all of a sudden he catches something in front of him, like a blur, some movement. He pulls his light around to try to shine on it. This time, this thing is within 10 feet and closing on him. This gigantic, hairy thing that's about 8 feet tall. He's armed. He pulls out his pistol. Happens to be a .454 Kazoo, which if anybody knows anything about guns knows it's bigger than a .44 Magnum. It's one of the largest handguns a civilian can own. It's right up there close to it. Ain't about two guns bigger than that in the world that exists as far as a handgun goes. So he gets off three rounds into this thing point blank, less than 10 feet, in the chest. This thing still grabs him. It doesn't deter this thing one bit. This thing grabs this man, bear hugs him, and picks him up and starts to squeeze the life out of him. He happens to have a vest on with a knife holster that's directly over his heart, like kind of like a military holster where he carries a K-bar. At this point in time, the gun fell to the ground. He dropped the gun. The light fell. He pulls his K-bar out and starts jabbing this thing that's got him in a bear hug, picked up 3 feet off the ground. His feet are 3 feet off the ground, and this thing's got him in a bear hug. And he starts jabbing this thing directly down underneath the chin in the jugular area. You know, bypassing, you want to get in the soft area in between the rib cage and the throat. That's where he's jabbing this thing. He stabs this thing 15 to 20 times. We don't have an exact number. He just knows that he was fighting for his life. At this time, this guy's freaked out. So this thing, after he's jabbed him, you know, a good 12, 15 times, throws him 20 feet through the air backwards. He lands flat on his back. All right, gets up, and he's scrambling to find his light and his gun. You know, just as fast as he could get up, it nearly knocked him unconscious from what I gathered. It stunned him, in other words. And this thing is gone. But right there, if we're at the point where this thing grabbed him and he was urinating, it picked him up, there's a pool of blood on the ground. This gives you any idea of the kind of damage that's been done to this animal or this creature, whatever it is. And he's, you know, it's pulled up, nice big spot of blood, and he finds a gun over there a few feet off to the left where, you know, it fell out, and he got slung to the side. He finds his light over there. And at this time, I mean, because this all happened in a matter of about 10 seconds, these guys that are with him come running, you know, because they hear the commotion. They hear the fight and the struggle and the commotion. They don't know what's going on. And, you know, there's not supposed to be anything in the woods in this area, you know, that could be capable of putting up that kind of a fight with a human being. So, you know, he's there telling them what happened. His clothes are ripped. He's got a big rip gash in his jacket. And he tells them what happened, and they go looking for this thing just for a little while that night.
Hold on, son. Let me just hold on the... We got to do some more commercials and pay some bills. On the other side, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. You're going to hear what happened. Marco, it's to you.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized there was something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
When you hear screams, like breaking day, we hear these siren-type screams.
But it is sci-fi.
They just were too realistic to be frozen like a trim that
he's
manufactured.
The hand was freaking out.
Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives.
Bigfoot lives. A movie right now. At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Back to you, Tom.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Marco, I thought we were going to do the new one for Bigfoot Lives 2.
Oh.
That's what it says on your the thing you sent out to everybody.
No, it's not Bigfoot Lives 2. It's the second. There's two versions of it.
Okay, all right.
I did the second version on the intro.
Yeah, when they see the Bigfoot Lives 2 is about a quarter of the way done. Mm-hmm. When you see this movie, you're going to blow your mind. We've got so much happening this year. And oh, by the way, I've got to tell you, this is going to be a banner year for SFBI, a totally banner year for me and my guys. Okay, we've got so much happening, so much happening. A lot of things I can tell you, a lot of things I can't. All I'm telling you is you'll see Bigfoot Lives 2, The Anatomy of Bigfoot Hoax has been reworked. It's out now. You've got to get it. It answers all your questions. Bigfoot Lives 2 is just off the chain. Totally off the chain, okay? And then Bigfoot 3D will come out fall of this year also. That movie is just going to blow the world's mind. And, of course, we have our reality show that's going to hit the fall of this year because me and my boys will be out filming constantly from May through August. So we got a lot coming. And now we're going to get back to Youngblood. Youngblood, Kenny and Janine from PA say, hey, man, we love you, and how you doing? So give them a little shout-out, would you?
Hey, Kenny, you guys doing all right? I'm looking forward to getting back up there and catching you guys sometime in the near future.
They're great people,
great
aren't they?
Great people. Great people. Just wouldn't believe.
You got the floor for the next 4 minutes, so make it good.
Well, anyway, I don't know exactly how to go about this because we're not going to be able to close this. We're probably going to have to...
Well, we'll do part two next week, but give them hell now for the next 4 minutes, and you know what happened. Pick up from before we went on to commercial, and then go into the whole synopsis real quickly.
Well, anyway, the guys left out that night after the incident with the creature and a shooting and whatnot, come out of the woods. Decided they're going to go back the next day and check out what happened. They go back the next day, and they find it about 70, 80 yards, the body of this thing, about 70, 80 yards from where all this took place. And at this time, there is military forces at work. They're out on the move. There's helicopters in the air, all that good stuff. I'm talking Apaches, gunships loaded to the brim, and there happens to be a platoon of, I don't know if they're Navy SEALs, or I don't know if they're Army Rangers, whatnot. They're special forces, anyway, a platoon. The guys come out when M16's armed, and they assault these guys. You know, they're harassing them. You know, what did you do, and this, that, and the other, and all this stuff. And they get up giving these guys hell. But what they do is that they confiscate the body, and they incinerate right there in front of them. They build this huge fire and throw this thing up on top of it and burn it right there in front of them guys, and they just pretty much slap them on the back of the wrist and say, get gone, don't never come back. Well, this goes on. And at this time, while this guy's telling us this story, we're sitting here, and I'm noticing, and the chief's noticing as well, the paranoia that's come over this man, because he has been threatened to the point that he is fearing for his life by just talking to us. He has been threatened to that point. Because he's looking over his shoulder, and, you know, he happens to own the place we're in. He's looking over his shoulder and looking at all these people, checking to see if there's any new faces in there that he'd not recognized before. But anyway, he don't know what it is, so he goes and takes the jacket, which has blood on it. He got blood all over himself, by the way, when this thing was bear-hugging him. He takes it to the university. The university does an analysis on it. He's going to have them do an analysis on the blood and find out what this thing was. So he drops the jacket off. About a week goes by. The university calls him and tells him, you can come by and pick up your coat. And he's asking, well, what did you find? What did you find? The university won't respond to him. So he goes back, and he goes to the university. But he's talking to the same guy he brought the stuff into, and this guy's telling him that he never brought him nothing. You know, and this rolls around, and there's two guys waiting on him when he gets there at the university wearing black suits. I mean, you know, suit, tie, shades, all that good stuff. Government. You know, they're government guys. And they escort him out of the building. And at which point in time they go to, they escort him to their vehicle where they get the jacket that has since been taken to the dry cleaners, cleaned thoroughly, and all the damage done to the jacket's been repaired. The sleeve sewn up, all you couldn't ever tell that there was, you know, it ever got tore up. They give him the jacket and they escort him out, and they're, you know, kind of giving him the second degree here, telling him, look, just leave it alone. Don't call the university, don't pursue this, don't mess with it, just go on, disappear, and let it go. Well, him and his father and brother decided they're not going to do that. These guys, you know, jerking them around and whatnot, and they just done had enough of it. They go back out to the facility and area near it and start tracking another one of these things. And out of just spite, they kill it. And they got 9 slugs in it out of a 12-gauge. I think there were 500 or 1,000 grain slugs. Depends on what they were shooting, 2¾, 3 inch, it doesn't matter. But they got 9 slugs into this thing to slow it down where they could get on it from about 100 yards out, which is about the right range for that. It's about the most range you're going to get out of that weapon in that round. And they get 9 slugs into it. They run up on it after they wounded it mortally, and they shoot it 15 more times with 45 ACP. I mean, point blank, you know, right there. It's laying on the ground bleeding out. They just finish it off. Well, they're getting up, you know, the evidence and whatnot, and I mean, all hell breaks loose out there. I mean, the military's on full alert and everything. You know, the gunships.
Stop you right there, son. That's a cliffhanger. We'll have you back on next week to tell the whole story. We'll give you 20 minutes first part of the hour. But we got to get Leroy Blevins in. Son, thank you so much, and I'll see you in a few minutes. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that's my cohort in crime. This young man, he's got the cojones, man. He's, and I'll tell you what, he's learned a lot. And we've got some new young bloods coming down the pike. Old Rob Perry. Here's another boy. You remember that name, Rob Perry. You're going to be hearing a lot more of him down down the line with us, with me and my boys. Without any further ado, we're going out there. Please forgive me. He used to live in Ohio. I don't know if it's in Kentucky or Tennessee. Leroy Blevins, you with us, Leroy?
Yes, I'm here, Tom.
How are you, son?
All right, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Forgive me, we got a little long-winded here tonight, but you know what? We'll make up for it next week, but I've got to tell my listeners out there, ladies and gentlemen, this man is incredible. He made a suit of the Roger Patterson Bigfoot that you all saw, the one back there October 20th, 1967, okay? I don't know if Bill, do you have it up there?
Yeah, we have, actually, if you go on www.bigfootlive.com, you'll see that there's a right underneath Leroy's line on the show, there's a link, and that link is a web page, and it has 90% of the stuff that that Leroy sent me.
Okay,
I'll put the rest of it up for next week. I'll have it all up there.
Okay, my question is, will that one shot be there?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to get up there myself right now. All right. Now, where do I look? Tell me what to do. I'm stupid.
Go to www.bigfootlive.com.
I'm there now.
Okay. Underneath Leroy's line where it says Leroy Blevins, you're interviewing Leroy Blevins.
Yeah. Okay. Here it is. Ladies and gentlemen.
Click on the link.
All right. Hold on. Let me try to explain to my listeners. Okay. Show tonight, ladies and gentlemen, what's on this Wednesday? Bigfoot Live Radio Show. If you're on that page, the show 232, I'm sorry. Go down to number 3. Tom interviews Leroy Blevins. Underneath there, it has his streaming. And there you go. When you click on there, Leroy Blevins research on the Patterson film. You need to open this up and look at it now, ladies and gentlemen. You will freak out. Now, Leroy, where did you get the material to make this suit and everything is, my gosh, almost the same? Is that fur? What is that, all that?
Well, actually, that's two gorilla suits.
Two?
How to use, make, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Now, you need to clear something up for me because Bill's been under the weather, my partner Bill. He says that you talked Gimlin. And I says, no, I didn't think you did. I thought you talked to Hieronymus. Who did you talk to?
No, I talked to Bob Hieronymus. The voice recording I gave you was from an interview that Bob Gimlin done in 2009 where he claimed on a radio program that he did not had nothing to do with the camera, that Roger had the camera the whole time with him. Because
mm-hmm.
He don't even use a camera today.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So I was right. Okay. And you know the other thing that I'm noticing? That you're comparing the back and then that you're showing the letter there that was dated May 16th of 67 or 26, whatever that is, May 26th, where
yep.
Roger went out and borrowed money to do the movie. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the same day I was born.
Huh?
That was the same day I was born.
Well, congratulations. You're in your 40s. Now, at the same point in time, ladies and gentlemen, we have all of this information. We haven't brought it out to anybody. It will be in Bigfoot Lives, too. We've got it all on tape. We were up there. We've got the people who said the whole thing was a hoax. We got the man who made the suit. We got the man that was in the suit. But I'm shocked. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to go see this. It's on tonight's show, BigfootLiveRadioShow.com. You go on there and you'll see what's on tonight. Number 3, it's Leroy Blevins. And underneath there, he's got his streaming where he's got the link. And if you see the suit he made next to the actual Bigfoot creature, you will freak out. And here are these pros out there said they couldn't duplicate it. Here you are. What is your profession, Leroy?
Actually, I'm a construction worker.
Wow. Well, you're a hell of a construction Bigfoot worker because you just did something that the pros couldn't do. I'll be damned. Now, what did it cost you to buy these two suits?
Well, the two gorilla suits cost me a total of $223.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest parts I used that from my mom's house because she has stuff from 1950s that I used just to make the rest of it. and that's why I went out there and made the suit. I told people you can use the stuff that from 1950. So if you can find it in 1950s, you can make the suit in 1967.
Wow.
And it took me 3 days to make it.
Okay. So my big question to you is this, because we're going to be signing off in a couple of minutes, is, and we're going to have you back next week as well.
Okay.
When you did your investigation on this situation, and you made this actual film or this costume, and my God, you know, the pros need to take a look at this, because isn't that strange? You've even got the pendulous breasts. I think that's what I'm looking at, right?
Yeah. I have the breast on it as well.
Yeah, you have, my God, and I'll bet you what, if you would have put on those waders, those wading boots that go up to the hips and put the in the legs, you would have had the same size legs as Hieronymus had when he was walking there next to you.
Yeah.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to see this. It's blowing my mind. Totally blowing my mind. This is incredible, okay? And I bet you doing some more touch-up work on this, you could get pretty damn close to this whole thing, even closer than where you're at today. And you're no makeup man. No makeup artist is doing all this. You're a construction worker, and you've taken it upon yourself, and you cracked this on your own. Well, I'll tell you what. In a brief moment, what would you say about the Patterson film?
Patterson film was nothing more than part from a documentary that Roger Patterson and Gimlin was working on. That's all it was.
Okay. So here's my big question. I don't know if you can answer it. I don't know if I can answer it. I don't know if the people who are close to Bob Gimlin can answer it. But I know this. When I knocked on his door, and I know he was home, to him to get the whole truth out, he had ample time to come out there, and we were there for a couple of days, to come out and say his piece, but he didn't. He was afraid that Tom Biscardi was going to out him. Well, we're going to do our best to out him, believe me, with people like you. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, Leroy, thank you so much. We're going to have you back next week. You're going to come on right after Rob. We're going to have the two of you guys, because you guys can consume an entire show, and people need to know the truth. And you we'll be able to expose them all next week. What town are you in now?
I'm in Cynthiana, Kentucky.
And so you are in Kentucky. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's right. I knew you were in one of those states. All right. Well, listen, thanks so much, and we'll have you back on next week.
Okay.
Marco, back to you. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Good night, everybody.
Tom was a man with dreams.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Marco Bill, and that's the Bigfoot Live radio show for this week. All of us on the Bigfoot Live network would like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests for joining us tonight for an exciting evening of talk show entertainment, where you, the listeners, become a part of our on-the-air adventure. And we'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for sharing our adventure with us. Join us again next Wednesday evening for another exciting hour of the Bigfoot Live radio show with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. Until then, this is Marco Bill saying good night, and be good, be safe, and be here next week. See you then.
Reason for facts.